Good afternoon. This is Tamara. We'll be reading the Decatur Herald and Review. It's Wednesday, February 11th. Let's start with the front page. We have an article from Donette Beckett in Decatur. Girl Scouts gear up as cookie sales set to begin Friday. The local Girl Scout cookie cupboard is full, just in time for the kickoff. But it won't be that way for long. Girl Scouts will begin selling the sweet treats Friday, February 13th. Customers have until March 29th to stock up on their favorite cookies. Local Scouts Elena Brown, 8, and Piper Benson, 9, have helped organize the cookie boxes for Troop 3638 and made the homemade advertising posters they will display outside the local stores where cookies are sold. This year isn't their first cookie season. "We ask every person that walks by, 'Do you want to buy some Girl Scout cookies?'" Elena said, about a tried-and-true tactic for meeting potential customers walking by their cookie booths. The Scouts have selected times to set up booths at various businesses throughout central Illinois. Check the Girl Scouts website for local locations. Those needing a cookie fix also can order cookies online and pay a shipping fee to have them delivered to their home or office. Or you just tell your friends and family, Piper added, about requesting cookies from their favorite Girl Scout. According to Girl Scouts of Central Illinois President Kelly Day, the local Scouts have 26,400 boxes ready for the girls at the Decatur warehouse, and they keep bringing more as these go out, she said. Gone are the days of walking door-to-door requiring the customer to choose their favorite from a flyer with cookie images. The Scout would place the orders, wait weeks for the boxes, then make the delivery and accept the money. "Now you don't have to wait," Day said. "People eat them, then they want more." Troop leaders made their initial orders a few weeks ago. When members of the troop run out of cookies, they return to the warehouse for more. Girl Scouts of Southern Illinois, which includes troops in Coles and Cumberland counties, began selling cookies last month and will continue through March 15th. Two bakeries, ABC Bakers and Little Brownie Bakers, are responsible for supplying the cookies. Each district can choose which bakery will provide their cookies. Central Illinois troops, which include 36 counties, are selling ABC Bakers cookies. Southern Illinois Scouts, with 40 counties, are selling Little Brownie Baker cookies. "The names can be different," Day said. "Some people say they can taste a difference." For example, Caramel Delights go by the name Samoas in the Southern Illinois district. The peanut butter patties are tagalongs, and the peanut butter sandwich looks a lot like a do-si-do with a slightly different description. Each area also offers two cookies, each that the other doesn't offer. Central Illinois has caramel chocolate chip and lemonades, while Southern Illinois offers Lemon Ups and Toffee-tastic. New for this year, all troops, is the Explore Moors, a Rocky Road-inspired sandwich cookie with chocolate, marshmallow, and almond-flavored cream. Boxes of cookies are often sent to military troops and first responders. Operation Enduring Support volunteers have sent cookies as part of the care packages. According to the program's director, Diane Shaw, each package gets one or two boxes of cookies. "We have other items that go into the care boxes," she said. "It is the favorite item in the box." The responses from the troops have been uplifting for the Operation Enduring Support volunteers as well. "It's a connection to home," Shaw said. "It reminds our deployed military that they are not forgotten and they are appreciated." The program is a major fundraiser for the Scouts. Proceeds go towards the troops' camps, uniforms, badges, memberships, and programs. The funds have also helped others in the community. "This year they wanted to donate some money to a local animal shelter," said Tegan Brown, leader of Troop 3638. "They also want to donate to an anti-bullying organization," said fellow troop leader Christy Benson. "We're making sure everyone has an attitude that they're welcome and included. No one feels left out." The Scouts can earn travel dough, allowing them to bank the funds for up to 5 years. In past sales, girls have been able to fund large trips to such places as Disney World. Build-A-Bear has been added to the list of rewards. The stuffed animal kits are available at the Champaign Girl Scout office. "We call it the plush," Day said. Let the sales and sweets roll. To find your favorite Girl Scout cookies, you can visit getyourgirlpower.org, your Girl Scout cookie finder. From our local news, Brantley Gilbert will play July 3rd at the Devon. Brantley Gilbert has been announced as the latest addition to the Devon Lakeshore Amphitheater's 2026 summer concert lineup. Gilbert, with special guest Pecos and the Rooftops, will be on the Nelson Park stage on Friday, July 3rd. Tickets ranging from $42 to $89 will go on sale at 10 a.m. Friday, February 13th at devonamphitheater.com. The show is not part of the 2026 Devon season ticket package. Considered one of the godfathers of country's modern rock and rap edge, Brantley debuted with A Modern-Day Prodigal Son. He went on to rack up 7 number one hits, including Bottoms Up, Country Must Be Countrywide, You Don't Know Her Like I Do, and One Hell of an Amen. Updates and information on the Devon Lakeshore Amphitheater and list of summer acts are available on the venue's website and Facebook page. Again from our local news page, shooting suspects jailed, from Donette Beckett. Charges have been filed against two men accused of exchanging gunfire while being transported by a Decatur Moves van. According to a sworn police affidavit at approximately 8:09 p.m. Friday, the Decatur Public Transit System vehicle carrying 21-year-old Javonta L. Donley, 20-year-old Devin G. Garrison, and a 21-year-old woman stopped in the 3700 block of North Education Park Drive. The report said video surveillance showed Donley exiting the vehicle from the right passenger side sliding door and engaging in an argument with Garrison. Immediately following the argument, Donley discharged a firearm toward Garrison, who was still seated on the left side of the van. Garrison brandishes a firearm of his own and returns fire, the report stated. Donley was seen running southbound away from the scene while Garrison ran northbound. The driver of the Decatur Moves was still in the driver's seat throughout the duration of the shooting, placing her life in immediate danger, the report stated. The female passenger remained in the vehicle but retreated to the back of the van while the exchange of gunfire ensued. Additional video footage showed Donley immediately entered a blue SUV in a parking lot adjacent to 3777 North Portage Place. Police said both suspects were located and found with firearms. Donley, who has an active FOID certification, was wounded in the left thigh. He has been charged in Macon County Circuit Court with attempted murder, aggravated battery discharging a weapon, and aggravated discharge of a firearm. He remains in the Macon County Jail pending a detention hearing. Garrison received a gunshot wound to both knees. He does not have a FOID card. Garrison has been charged with aggravated unlawful possession of a weapon. He was denied pretrial release during a court hearing Monday. A preliminary hearing is set for February 18th. From Mattoon, watch parties set for Congress hopefuls. Watch parties are being held in Mattoon for voters wanting to learn more about the candidates in the race for the 15th Congressional District. Hosted by the League of Women Voters of Coles County, in conjunction with the Adams County Group, the watch parties, one for the Republican candidates and another for the Democrat candidates, will be held at the Mattoon Public Library. The events, viewed via Zoom, are open to the public. The 15th is a sprawling district that covers most of the rural areas and small towns of central Illinois, stretching from the Missouri and Iowa borders all the way to the Indiana state line. The seat is held by Mary Miller, a Republican from Hinesboro. The Adams County Group is streaming the candidate forums from First Christian Church in Quincy. The Republican forum is set for 6:30 p.m. Thursday, February 12th. It will feature challengers Judy Bowlby and Ryan Tabrug. Miller isn't scheduled to attend. The Democrat forum is set for 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, February 17th. Scheduled to appear are Jennifer Todd, Randy Raley, Paul Davis, or Kyle Nudo. The primary election is March 17th. The general election is November 3rd. On today's food page, we have recipes for a chocolate cake. A heavy dusting of sugar and cocoa makes for a fine finish on this cake. My Valentine loves cream anglaise, so I'll serve him a wedge with plenty of that classic custard sauce. To add a hint of orange flavor, look for bars like Lindt's Intense Orange. Alternatively, use semi-sweet or dark chocolate plus a drop or two of orange extract. We also have mini vegan chocolate tarts, homemade strawberry truffles, Besides being a special gift from the heart, homemade chocolates also are free from preservatives, extra sugar, and artificial ingredients, said Jennifer Bell, who blogs about cooking at a sweet alternative. Her three-ingredient truffles are stuffed with strawberries, and their creamy center is enveloped in a crispy chocolate shell. They're such an easy gift that's got that homemade touch, Bell said. And really, all you need in terms of equipment is parchment paper or a silicone baking mat. For recipes for all these sweet Valentine treats, see our food page, B5. Now, part one of our opinion page, wrapping rates. Congress should lower interest on credit cards. From Carter Doherty. Doherty is the senior fellow for anti-monopoly and finance at Demand Progress, an advocacy group and think tank. He wrote this for the Los Angeles Times. A few gigantic financial institutions exert nearly unlimited power over how much consumers and businesses pay to use credit cards. American consumers and small businesses are fed up with the cost, and two U.S. senators responded. U.S. Senators Bernie Sanders, independent Vermont, and Josh Hawley, Republican Missouri, truly strange political bedfellows, recently proposed a 10% cap on credit card interest rates. President Donald Trump has championed the idea, too. An interest cap absolutely has its place in consumer protection. But we must also address the underlying structure of this market. The credit card business in the U.S. is not a free market with robust competition. Instead, an oligopoly of dominant banks issues them. J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, American Express, Citigroup, and Capital One together account for about 70% of all transactions. We also have a duopoly of networks, Visa and MasterCard, which process more than 80% of those transactions. The results are higher prices for consumers who use credit cards and the businesses that accept them. Consider the difference between borrowing benchmarks such as the prime rate and what you pay on your credit card. That markup has been rising steadily and now stands at 16.4%. If you own a small business, the situation is equally grim. Credit cards are a major source of credit for small businesses at an increasingly high cost. Businesses also suffer from the fees Visa and MasterCard charges merchants on customer payments. Those fees nearly doubled in 5 years to $111 billion in 2024, according to the Merchants Payments Coalition. Largely passed on to consumers in higher prices, these charges often rank as the second or third highest merchant cost after real estate and labor. In other industrialized countries, the simple task of moving money, the basic function of Visa and MasterCard, is much less expensive. Consumer credit elsewhere in the world also comes with greater competition and tougher regulation. Now, Sanders, Hawley, and other American leaders want caps on interest rates for credit cards. A handful of states already limit interest rates. Texas imposes a 10% cap on many loans. Congress in 2006 chose to protect military service members via a 36% limit on interest. In 2009, it banned an array of sneaky fees designed to extract more money from card users. Federal credit unions cannot charge more than 18% interest, including on credit cards. The bank lobby claims any regulation will only hurt people who are trying to help. But credit still flows to soldiers and sailors. Credit unions still issue cards. States with caps still have functioning financial systems. And the 2009 law Congress passed convinced even skeptical economists that the result was a better market for consumers. Banks and card networks may worry about profit, but lawmakers have no compelling public policy reason to protect that. Major banks have profit margins that exceed 30%. Visa and MasterCard average a margin of 45%. Meanwhile, consumers face $1.3 trillion in debt, and retailers squeeze by with a margin of about 3%. Grocers make do with half that. The market won't fix what's wrong with credit card fees because the handful of businesses that control it are feasting at everyone else's expense. We must liberate the market from the grip of the major banks and card processors and restore vibrant competition. Fortunately, Trump has endorsed bipartisan legislation, the Credit Card Competition Act, that would crack open the Visa MasterCard duopoly by allowing merchants to route transactions over competing networks. That change would leave the megabank still controlling the credit card market. One approach would be consumer-friendly regulation of other means of credit, such as buy now, pay later tools, or innovative payment applications. Ideally, Congress would cap the size of banks. American voters are groaning under the weight of credit card debt. The race between the two major parties to ride that feeling to victory in the November midterm elections has begun. We'll read the second half of the opinion page in the second half hour of our reading. The second half portion of the opinion page is by Chris Cargill. Cargill is the president of Mountain States Policy Center, a free market think tank, mountainstatespolicy.org. He wrote this for the Tri-City Herald in Kennewick, Washington, and Tribune Content Agency. 10% cap would make borrowing more difficult, is his topic. Now from state and national news, Congress, Trump's border ICE chiefs testify. From Rebecca Santana, Associated Press, Washington, D.C. Fatal shootings by feds stalk White House immigration campaign. The heads of the agencies carrying out President Donald Trump's mass deportation agenda testified in Congress Tuesday and faced questions over how they are prosecuting immigration enforcement inside American cities. Trump's immigration campaign has been heavily scrutinized in recent weeks after federal Homeland Security agents shot and killed two protesters in Minneapolis. The agencies also faced criticism for a wave of policies that critics say trample on the rights of both immigrants facing arrest and Americans protesting the enforcement actions. Todd Lyons, the acting director of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Rodney Scott, who heads U.S. Customs and Border Protection, and Joseph Edlow, who is the director of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, were scheduled to speak in front of the House Committee on Homeland Security. This is the first time all three appeared in Congress since the department received a huge infusion of money last summer, and since immigration enforcement operations intensified across the country. The officials spoke at a time of falling public support for how their agencies are carrying out Trump's immigration vision. Under Lyons' leadership, ICE underwent a massive hiring boom, and immigration officers deployed in beefed-up enforcement operations in cities across the country designed to increase arrests and deportations. The appearance in Congress comes as lawmakers are locked in a battle over whether DHS should be funded without restraints placed over its officers' conduct. Lyons is likely to face questioning over a memo he signed last year telling ICE officers they didn't need a judge's warrant to forcibly enter a house to arrest a deportee, a memo that went against years of ICE practice and Fourth Amendment protections against illegal searches. During Scott's tenure, his agency took on a significant role in arresting and removing illegal immigrants from inside the country. That increased activity became a flashpoint for controversy and marks a break from the agency's traditional job of protecting borders and controlling who and what enters the country. Under Commander Gregory Bovino, a group of Border Patrol agents hopscotched around the country to operations in Los Angeles, Chicago, Charlotte, and New Orleans, where they were often accused of indiscriminately questioning and arresting people they suspected were in the country illegally. Bovino claimed his targets are legitimate and identified through intelligence, and says that if his officers use force to make an arrest, it's because it's warranted. A Border Patrol agent and Customs and Border Protection officer both opened fire during the killing of Alex Preti, one of two protesters killed in Minneapolis in January. An ICE officer shot and killed the other protester, Renee Good. After the Preti shooting, Bovino was reassigned, and Trump sent his border czar Tom Homan to Minneapolis to assume control. USCIS also faced criticism for steps it took, including subjecting refugees already admitted to the U.S. to another round of vetting and pausing decisions on all asylum cases. From the Associated Press, Pentagon cutting ties with woke Harvard. Jocelyn Gecker and Colin Binkley. The Pentagon said it is cutting ties with Harvard University ending all military training, fellowships, and certificate programs with the Ivy League institution. The announcement last week marks the latest development in the Trump administration's prolonged standoff with Harvard over the White House's demands for reforms at the Ivy League school. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said in a statement that Harvard no longer meets the needs of the War Department or the military services. For too long, this department has sent our best and brightest officers to Harvard, hoping the university would better understand and appreciate our warrior class, Hegseth said. Instead, too many of our officers came back looking too much like Harvard, heads full of globalist and radical ideologies that do not improve our fighting ranks. In a separate post on social media, Hegseth wrote, "Harvard is woke, the War Department is not." Starting with the 26-27 academic year, the Pentagon will discontinue graduate-level professional military education, fellowships, and certificate programs, the statement said. Personnel attending classes at Harvard will be able to finish those courses. Similar programs at other Ivy League universities will be evaluated in coming weeks, Hegseth said. Hegseth earned a master's degree from Harvard, but symbolically returned his diploma in a 22 Fox News segment. A Pentagon social media account run by Hegseth's office resurfaced the clip in which Hegseth, then a Fox News commentator, returned the diploma and wrote "Return to Sender" on it with a marker. The military offers its officers a variety of opportunities to get graduate-level education, both at war colleges run by the military as well as civilian institutions like Harvard. Broadly, while opportunities to attend prestigious civilian schools offer less direct benefit to a service member's military career than their civilian counterparts, they help make troops more attractive employees once they leave the military. Harvard has long been President Donald Trump's top target in his administration's campaign to bring the nation's most prestigious universities to heel. His officials cut billions of dollars in Harvard's federal research funding and attempted to block it from enrolling foreign students after the campus rebuffed several government demands last April. The White House says it's punishing Harvard for tolerating anti-Jewish bias on campus. Harvard leaders argue they face illegal retaliation for failing to adopt the administration's ideological views. Harvard filed two lawsuits against the administration. A federal judge issued orders siding with Harvard in both cases. The administration appealed. From our E-Edition Plus, War in Ukraine, from Max Corder, Associated Press. Attacking the grid. What international law says about targeting energy infrastructure. Russian missiles and drones pounded Ukraine's energy grid in recent weeks, plunging people into frozen darkness in one of the country's coldest winters on record. Ukraine accused Russia of illegally targeting power infrastructure during the war to deny civilians light, heat, and running water. Taking advantage of the coldest days of winter to terrorize people is more important to Russia than diplomacy, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said on the eve of a new round of talks about ending the conflict and as temperatures in Kyiv hovered around -3 degrees Fahrenheit. Russia says its attacks are a legitimate part of its military campaign against its neighbor. Moscow's invasion of Ukraine itself is widely regarded as an illegal act of aggression. Combatants can legally target a power grid if the attack directly affects a valid military target, but they cannot cause excessive civilian casualties, said David Crane, former chief prosecutor at the United Nations Special Court for Sierra Leone. In the case of Russia's attacks on Ukraine, the indiscriminate and widespread targeting does not come close to what is legal, he said in an emailed response to the questions from the Associated Press. The International Committee of the Red Cross says parts of energy systems that provide essential services to civilians are in principle civilian objects and as such are protected against direct attack and reprisals as well as incidental harm. Pre-trial judges from the International Criminal Court issued arrest warrants in 2024 for top Russian military brass and the country's former defense ministers for their alleged involvement in missile strikes targeting electricity infrastructure. In announcing warrants for former Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu and Russia's Chief Military Officer General Valery Gerasimov, The court said judges found reasonable grounds to believe that the alleged strikes were directed against civilian objects, and for those installations that may have qualified as military objectives at the relevant time, the expected incidental civilian harm and damage would have been clearly excessive to the anticipated military advantage. Russia is not a member of the court, rejects its jurisdiction, and refuses to extradite suspects to face justice in the ICC's courtrooms in The Hague, Netherlands. The Russian military repeatedly said it targets energy facilities and other infrastructure that support Ukrainian military industries and armed forces. It denied targeting residential areas despite daily evidence to the contrary. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov insisted that our military is striking the targets that they believe are associated with the military complex of the Kyiv regime. The operation is continuing. Kyiv accuses Russia of seeking to wear down Ukrainians' appetite for the fight by inflicting grinding hardship on civilians forced to live in dark, freezing homes. Authorities say Russia tried to cripple Ukraine's electricity network by targeting substations, transformers, turbines, and generators at power plants. Ukraine's largest private power company, DTEK, said a recent overnight attack was the ninth major assault on the company's thermal power plant since October. Ukraine's energy sector suffered more than $20 billion in direct war damage, according to a joint estimate by the World Bank, the European Commission, and the United Nations. Now, hints from Heloise. Pastor Way's getting a dog at 90 years old. Dear Heloise, maybe you can help me. I infer from reading your column in the Omaha World Herald that you have an affinity for pets. This leads me to ask you what may be an unanswerable question. I'm a widowed nonagenarian who yearns for a cuddly comfort. Although she's been deceased for nearly 7 years, I still feel so attached to my wife of 63 years, I don't want a new romance. But I love dogs. I'd love to have a miniature golden doodle to snuggle up next to me. I would enjoy the companionship and having a loving, nurturing, living being beside me. The problem is that in my old age, I have a heart issue that makes it impossible for me to take it for walks. Our winter and stormy times are additionally prohibitive for walking outdoors. I live in an apartment, so I don't have a fenced-in yard. I'm an old, retired pastor who doesn't feel like he can afford to hire someone to walk the dog. So, is there a solution for me, or should I give up the dream? Thank you. You bless a lot of lives. J. Keith C. via email. J., it seems that at this stage of life, a dog is not really the answer. They have vet bills, need to be walked, and need to have a caretaker if you are not there to take care of them. They also need to be bathed and groomed. However, one of my readers told me that she sleeps with a fairly large-sized teddy bear so that she can cuddle with it at night. Another reader said she uses a long pillow. Readers, do any of you know of a solution that works for you or someone else you know? Hint for dry erase boards. Dear Heloise, I'm not sure if many of your readers can use this tip, but I have a dry erase board that I use for working at home. I know some use it for family schedules. Over the years, I tried dry erase sponges and cleaners that never quite got the ink off. Recently, I was out of sponges, so I tried using a Kleenex. It got everything off perfectly and even left it shining. Suzanne S. in Shaker Heights, Ohio. Dear Heloise, please ask your readers to save their plastic bags for the local food bank. We constantly need bags of all kinds, paper, plastic, canvas, anything that can hold food for our clients to carry home. Additionally, egg cartons are very helpful as we buy eggs in bulk, then divide them into smaller portions in cartons. Jennifer W. via email. When storing a will. Dear Heloise, I have to disagree with Ken F. in Nebraska, who suggested placing wills and funeral instructions in safety deposit boxes. If the co-personal representative for the deceased is a co-owner of the box, they may be able to get access. But if they are just a co-signer on the box, then their access ends after the owner of the safety deposit box dies. The box is usually sealed until a court appoints a personal representative, an executor, who presents a death certificate and a court order to the bank. If the will and funeral instructions are in the box, they will not be readily available if they're stored this way. I learned this the hard way after my parents' death. Ruth D. in Louisiana. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, February 11th. Please stay tuned.